Hello and welcome to You Gotta Believe, the NL East podcast from across the pond. We will be talking the 2021 baseball season, which starts in a couple of days, specifically from a National League East perspective. My name is Jody Jameson. I support the Philadelphia Phillies.
I'm Thomas Frost. I support the New York Mets.
So we are obviously back for the first full season in a couple of years. Obviously, last year we had the 60-game season, which was interesting, to say the least. But obviously, it'll be very nice to get back to a full schedule. Things are still going to be pretty different in most places for quite a while. We'll touch on that as we go on. But Thomas, I guess you must be excited to get some baseball back in March and April for the first time in 2 years.
Yeah, absolutely delighted. Yeah, it's been much too long. And yes, last year didn't really grab me, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it was fun. You know, the postseason is always fun, even if it was a little bit weird and very highly elaborate, for want of a better word. And it was, I'm just happy to go back to some sort of new normality, even if, you know, for a little while we're going to be without fans. But although if the stories are true, people in Texas are going to be seeing their teams live, but that's another issue. But yeah, just happy to be able to get games and meaningful baseball games, because I got to admit, I don't watch training games. To be honest, I'm the same in other sports, really. I just don't do friendlies. To be honest,
I agree with spring training. I think the thing is, when it comes to spring training, it's like if something needs to be known, it'll be known. You know. I think that obviously in America, and it'll be happening less this season, obviously, but there's always been a bit of a thing with some fans where they go to spring training. But I think that's more an excuse to go to Florida or Arizona for a couple of weeks rather than actually to study, you know, the fourth arm out of the bullpen and stuff like that. So I think spring training's obviously, you know, to some people it's very useful, but I can't imagine like sitting and watching spring training all of March, to be honest. And I'm the same with every other sport, like you say, to be honest. Like as a football fan, for example, I have been to preseason friendlies, but you know, it's been years and I couldn't care less, to be honest. So as long as when it comes to your team, things are looking mildly positive, and they kind of are for the Phillies, so we'll touch on that a wee bit later on. Somebody else you touched on, actually, which we might as well just get out of the way at the moment. Obviously, with the pandemic still raging, most places will be going with either no fans or a very, very limited number of fans. But as you mentioned, Texas are going to play in front of a full crowd on opening day. And I don't want to labour the point too much, but considering where the West is with the pandemic, that seems absolutely mental to me, to be completely honest. But I don't know if you've got anything you want to say about that, but yeah, I think it's bananas that the Texas Rangers are going to play in front of a full stadium.
Yeah, I don't think I can add much more to that. I think it's a bit ridiculous, and to be honest, I don't see how we can really add anything to what's already been said. It just seems just odd, to be perfectly honest. I mean, it's more to the point, I think there should be, I know it's different in America to how it is, certainly as a much smaller country like ours, but I've always, maybe naively, but I would have thought there would have been something, you know, across the board, like if one team is doing it, all teams should do it, if you know what I mean, you know, not separated by team, you know. I would have thought there just has to be some sort of agreement that, you know, we'll do what everyone is doing rather than, you know, we'll just decide what we're going to do. But
potentially, yeah. I think it's one of those weird things. Like, say we were in a scenario, and I know obviously we're not in this scenario at all, but say we were in a scenario where Canada's COVID situation was completely under control, while America was mental. I think it would be harsh to stop Toronto having full crowds, for example. You know,
yeah,
and obviously, like, If the numbers in the States were very, very different, I'd appreciate I'd appreciate, you know, places being allowed to do certain things. But I'm just going to have a quick scroll through them now. The Diamondbacks are going to play at 25%. We're just going to do the whole league right now. The Braves is at 33%. Baltimore's at 25%. Red Sox is at 12%. 20% for both Chicago teams. Cincinnati Reds at 30%, Cleveland Indians at 30%, Colorado Rockies will play at 42.6% capacity, which is unbelievably specific. Detroit Tigers will play 20% capacity. Wait a minute, there's actually a long blurb about this. For a time, the Tigers were allowed to have more fans at their spring training than would be allowed in Detroit. All right, okay, because they were originally only going to allow 1,000 into Detroit. We have Houston Astros at 50% capacity, which is starting to get up there. 30% for Kansas, 20% for the Angels, 20% for the Dodgers, 25% for Miami. I'm actually really surprised Miami's only 25% because Florida's been absolutely mental. Dana White hosting a UFC in April in Florida that's going to be at 100% capacity. That's bonkers. 25% for the Brewers, 25% for the Twins, 20% for your Mets, 20% for the Yankees, Oakland at 20, the Phillies at 20, the Pirates at 20, the Padres at 20, the Giants at 20, another 20 for the Mariners, 32% for St. Louis Cardinals, and 20 for the Tampa Bay Rays. Obviously, we've got the 100% for Texas, which is mad, 15% for Toronto at Dunedin. And Washington will play at 12% capacity. Now, it's just funny actually looking through some of those where it's just like, you know, certain areas actually surprised me. Now, obviously, Miami surprised me in a good way, Miami and the Tampa Bay Rays. But obviously, like Houston playing at 50% capacity and the Texas Rangers playing at 100% capacity just seems absolutely mental. Now, I am actually happy to go through that list. I actually thought there was a couple of teams who were still having zero fans. I'm actually quite happy that there's going to be fans everywhere because I think we are now at a scenario where we can at least have some, you know what I mean? Like it doesn't have to be empty stadiums anymore because we've been doing this for a year and we figured out ways to hold these kind of events without it being a problem. And as long as the teams are sensible and have the right things in place to make sure that everything's okay, then it's going to be all right. Obviously, I think that the Texas Rangers is going to be a disaster. And most everywhere else, I think, will be okay. So it's interesting because obviously, not so much in the UK, but certainly in other places, and certainly America, a lot of places have been having, you know, these sort of 20% capacities while having no spread within, you know, no contact tracing, which comes back and goes back to the actual venue that they were at. So I think it's doable, and I'm glad that every team's actually going to have some fans on opening day.
Yeah, that's I must admit, I was surprised hearing some of those numbers. So I'm delighted actually that we're going to be able to get some fans in, and you know, as long as it's managed correctly, I haven't got a problem with it.
Yeah, because I've been watching, one of my guilty pleasures is pro wrestling, and I've been watching All Elite Wrestling, and they've been doing all their shows since the pandemic started in Daly's Place in Jacksonville, which is just outside, well, it's actually joined on to the Jacksonville Jaguars NFL Stadium. And they've been like really slowly adding fans, really since about the summer last year, maybe late summer, early autumn, and they've not had a single case of spread in the crowd. Now, granted, it's an outdoor arena, so that helps. And obviously, baseball stadiums are outdoor arenas, so that certainly helps. And like, but at the same time, they've not really gone mad with the capacity or anything like that, despite the fact that they could really go to town in Florida, considering how things have been going there. But yeah, it's definitely good that we're going to get fans back in the stadiums, and hopefully it's really going to be up to the teams to make sure it's in a controlled manner. Obviously, I'm extremely worried about Texas, but everywhere else, I think, can at least do the right thing. And to be perfectly honest, the way that some attendance is going sport, if the Miami Marlins can have 25% of the stadium, it's going to look no different than any other regular season. So that should be pretty good.
Yeah, to be honest, I'm glad you made that joke. I was almost going to order my word.
I didn't mean it as bad as it came out, but you know, the truth hurts sometimes. But anyway, speaking of, I can't really say much considering Philly's attendances over the last 10 years anyway. But so I guess we can start with the Miami Marlins. We're going to talk about the other three teams that we don't support in the league right now. Oh, hold on. Jesus. A YouTube video just started. I don't know if that came up on the broadcast. So we'll start with the Marlins. Obviously, a big surprise last year, really, in making the playoffs, especially considering how little the Marlins had done the few years before, how little they were fancied going into 2020, and then how badly 2020 started with the mass COVID outbreak on the team. I think, obviously, they essentially playing the backups for a week or two, and having a really, really good record with the backups when we were expecting their season to implode really helped propel them on to the postseason. Obviously, didn't go much further once the playoffs started, but I was actually really, really impressed with the Marlins last year. I thought that on the field, you really couldn't have asked for any more from them. And while I don't think, obviously, the rebuild is anywhere close to being complete for the Marlins, I think that they are at least in a position where they can be competitive and 2021. I wouldn't call them the favourite for the division by any means, but we've spent the last few years talking about how many more than 100 losses we expect the Marlins to get. I think we can write that off at the moment.
Yeah, without question. Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not going to, because of how competitive the division is, I'm not going to say they're even going to have a winning record. I mean, they may well do, but it's as I said, it's, you know, very competitive division. I was pleasantly surprised with Marlins because I thought it was maybe about a year. I think I made a prediction back in about 2019 and I thought 2021 was when they were going to get good. But so there was a bit ahead of schedule for me. But it was, I think if you actually just look at their roster, they've actually got some very good players. And it's certainly pitching-wise. And they got like some good hitters as well. It's a nice sort of balance that they sort of got. So it's going to be interesting to watch see how they progress, really, because as I said, they have got a lot nice mix of sort of good youth with, you know, Sandy Alcantara, Lewis Brinson, Monty Harrison, Jesus Sanchez. I got mixed up with someone else. Sorry, Sixto Sanchez. Sorry, is the one I was thinking of. But yeah, and then you just got that sort of youth of that, sort of mixed with, you know, a bit more experience like Rojas as well, and the addition of someone like Adam Duval, Jesus Aguilar. You know, there's a lot of talent there, and you know, not one that you. So you're certainly not a lineup that you can, you know, sleep on. I think you will have to go to pay attention when you're a pitcher when you play the Marlins these days. There's not a lot of easy outs in that side anymore. So yeah. There's definitely reasons for optimism for the Marlins for sure.
I think the only thing I'd be really concerned about with the Marlins really is, I say the only thing, but like, this is a team to me at the moment that is fixing to be average, if that makes sense. They really strike me as like, you know, the type of team that's going to be maybe between 75 and 85 wins. You know, I can't see them being much lower or much higher than that. But it's really interesting because they've got such a boom or bust lineup going in at the moment. I think that they certainly don't have anybody in their lineup who you imagine is just going to, you know, have a 400 on base percentage and just be the catalyst. But they seem to have reasonably steady, consistent power all through the lineup. And I kind of like that. And it's going to be really interesting to see what they've got because, you know, they've got a bunch of they have added a bunch of veterans to their lineup over the last couple of years. Nothing spectacular, but guys you can rely on and guys that can be reasonably solid. And I think all it's really going to take from them is someone around them to just have a breakout season. And in terms of how steady I think the Marlins can be this season, I think if one or two players really step forward, have a career year or have a breakout year or whatever, I think they could be pretty good, to be perfectly honest. I don't think, like, it's impossible to look at this Marlins team and think that's a contender by any means, but, like, you know, it really wouldn't surprise me to see them knocking on the door of a wild card again. Again, like I said, it really wouldn't surprise me if they finished 10 games under, but this is a fascinating team to me, to be perfectly honest. I think, obviously, Sixto Sanchez came in last year and was obviously the prize part of the JT Realmuto trade, and Sanchez could be massive in that rotation. They have a fairly solid rotation. I think the main thing they're obviously lacking is an ace. And if Sanchez can take another step forward this season and become the ace of that staff, I think you know, the Marlins. I hate to use this word, but I think it's important to use more in baseball. But I think the variance is really going to determine what happens with the Marlins, because they project to be a reasonably solid team. But if the guys that we expect to have big years do have big years, it could be quite exciting for them, to be perfectly honest. And I'm obviously interested in what Sanchez does, because obviously he's in the division. Obviously he did come through the Phillies prospect, the Phillies minor league system, which hasn't really produced that much over the last 10 years. But he seems to be the pick of the bunch in terms of that. So obviously they were going to have to give up a steep price to get Realmuto regardless. But yeah, I look at the lineup. Obviously you got Dickerson, Marte, Aguilar, Duval, Anderson. You know, I think this is a reasonably solid lineup. They're certainly not a superstar in there by any means, but I think they're going to be pretty interesting this year. Now, there was the project. I'm just having a look at the projections on RotoChamp for what they expect for the Marlins, and they had them down at 70 wins, which, you know, I know it's obviously data driven, but 70 seems awfully light for them, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, I'd be expecting about at least somewhere between 75 and 79 wins for the Marlins.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to sleep on the Marlins this year. I think their team is solid enough. Granted, a lot went right for them last year, other than obviously, you know, we talked about the COVID outbreak. But in terms of like people having years you didn't expect, it kind of all fell into place for the Marlins. But, you know, I think they could be all right this season, to be perfectly honest. I don't expect them to just go back into the doldrums. They may finish fifth in the division, but as we'll get to, I don't think there's necessarily a really bad team in this division. So I think it's going to be quite interesting. I think the Marlins, to me, are the most fascinating team in the division, just to see if they can continue what they did in 2020. So I guess we'll see how it goes. And I guess on the flip side, obviously, the Marlins were like one of the most pleasant surprises of the 2020 season. The biggest disappointment was the Washington Nationals. Now, obviously, they had some problems obviously, going into 2020, despite the fact they were the reigning World Series champions. Anthony Rendon disappeared. Few injuries in the lineup. Juan Soto got COVID on opening day. You know, it was just one of those where, like, the early indications were that this is not going to be the title defense we're expecting, but I don't think anybody could have expected it to go as bad as it did with the Nationals. Now, obviously, you look at the Nationals going into 2021, and, you know, they've got three or four key guys currently on the injured list. So it may be interesting to see what kind of start they get off to. I expect them to be better than 2020, but how much better than 2020 do you think they're going to be?
They're difficult. I mean, it's every team, apart from maybe the Braves in this division, are pretty hard to call really what's going to happen, because they've added, you know, one or two that, as well, like Kyle Schwarber and John Lester, that, you know, there's plenty of upside there. You know, if they, especially Kyle Schwarber with that left hand bat, if he can get his power going, he could be a huge addition. But I don't know with the Nationals. They're even by this division standards, they're a little hard to call. I like some of the additions they've done, not just Schwarber and Lester, but I like them bringing in Brad Hand. I think that's a very solid addition to the bullpen. So I mean, but I said, if you just look at their team, you know, there's not a lot that's changed since. I mean, obviously there's, you know, it's the infield is where we wanted it. Except I know they had sort of put Carter Kaboom as the heir apparent to Rendon. Whether that is still the case, I don't know. But it is, you know, they still got some solid guys in there. You know, they've added Josh Bell in a trade and Josh Harrison, I think, as well. They obviously still got Starlin Castro, Ryan Zimmerman, Trey Turner. You know, some solid guys. I don't expect them to go be up there for a wildcard spot. I mean, if everything goes right, yes, they've got a chance, because they, you look at their rotation, it's still very sort of formidable. You know, Patrick Corbin, Scherzer, Strasburg, just to start off with, and, you know, if Juan Soto gets gets going, you know, then all things can happen. But it's, I don't see enough there to really think that they're going to, you know, challenge. I think it's going to be just a bit of a rebuild year for them.
It's interesting because I think when I look at them, right? Obviously, Juan Soto is arguably the most exciting player in baseball right now. The guy's unbelievable. You look at the rest of the lineup, and it's good.
Yeah,
but I don't know. It feels like one of the things that kind of carried this team through when they were good was the fact that they had so much depth in their lineup. And I kind of feel like the depth's slowly starting to dissipate in this lineup. Now, obviously, like, I like Victor Robles. You know, he's a good enough hitter. Trey Turner's a good enough hitter. But, like, I feel like when you go back and you had this team when it was sort of, like, the core of the lineup was, like, Harper, Zimmerman, Anthony Rendon. I really, really, really like that lineup. But I feel like now the lineup is in a... I'm surprised when I look at it. Like, obviously, like, Josh Bell is an interesting addition. Kyle Schwarber is an interesting addition. But, like, I kind of worry that this team's going to be, like, a swing for the fences kind of team that racks up a lot of home runs and racks up a lot of strikeouts, which I know, obviously, is the way baseball's moving in 2021. But at the same time, like, other than Soto, I don't see guys in this lineup who are going to, you know, put up a massive on-base number. So you might just end up finding this team hitting a lot of solo home runs, or certainly, you know, solo home runs where Soto isn't on base. But the lineup, I've got concerns about the lineup considering where it should be. Now, the rotation I've got no concerns with. I think the only real concern with the rotation is obviously, you know, Strasburg's been a bit nicked up. So we'll see what happens with Steven Strasburg. John Lester, you know, if John Lester was being added as a number two, you'd be a bit concerned. I mean, he's realistically a number four in this rotation, so that's pretty damn good. Yeah. Scherzer, still one of the best pitchers in baseball. Patrick Corbin can be a little bit up and down, but amazingly talented. And obviously, we all know about Steven Strasburg. So I think, again, I look at this team, and I've got concerns. And it's a different concern when I talk about the Marlins, because I mean, we don't expect that much out of the Marlins, despite the fact, obviously, they had a very impressive 2020 just over the last few years. But when you look at what Washington have been able to do really since 2012, I don't know. I look at this team and I think that this is the type of team that's probably going to barely have a winning record, but probably not going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I go along. I'd say they're going to be about 500.
Hmm. Yeah. I like the look of this team to finish about 83, 84, 85 wins, but I can't imagine this team just bouncing back to where it was in 2019. You know, and I know realistically, like, the biggest miss from that 2019 team is Anthony Rendon, and most everything else is still there, but I don't know. I'm really not feeling this team considering where it was just a couple of years ago. I think it's going to be decent, but I do feel like there's at least two better teams in the division.
Yeah, I agree.
So, we'll prepare to eat humble pie on that one by September. We'll find out how it goes. The Atlanta Braves, I would argue, not only the most exciting team in the division. I know you might have something to say about this, but I actually think the Atlanta Braves are probably the most exciting team in Major League Baseball at the moment, just in terms of a young core of incredibly talented cost control players. Now, obviously, there's going to be a lot of hype about the New York Mets this summer, and understandably so. I still think the Braves are the team to beat in this division. You look at the lineup, and it's just stacked. And you look at the pitching rotation, and the interesting thing I find about the pitching rotation with the Marlins is that it's more than five deep. You know, it's like... Like, don't get me wrong, obviously, there's guys in the rotation that you would prefer not to have to go to every 5 days. But at the same time, you look at the rotation right now, Max Fried, Charlie Morton, Ian Anderson, pretty damn good. Mike Soroka is still to come back. And even like when, if your number five ends up being like Drew Smiley, you're doing something right. And on top of that, on top of that lineup that is just going to score runs for fun, I think the Braves. I think the Braves potentially slightly disappointed last season, and I know that sounds really stupid considering how far they went, but I feel like last year was a year that you could really have expected the Braves to be disappointed with anything other than winning the National League. And I think they're going to be one of the front runners to win the National League again this season. Now, obviously, there is a juggernaut in Los Angeles to contend with, but I think the Braves are good enough to do absolutely anything this season.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I have been even saying it to Mets fans on Twitter that I still think, and this isn't just me being a Mets pessimist, which it's difficult not to be, you know, even in the 9 years I've supported the Mets. It's just look at the Braves. Everything is perfect, pretty much. It's, I mean, if you want to nitpick, you could say the bullpen, you know, could be a little bit sort of deeper. I mean, there's probably only Chris Martin, Will Smith, that I'd say are real quality relievers. I think the others are good, but no better than that. But it's, I mean, as I said, if you just look at the rotation, is really, when Drew Smiley's, you're probably going to be your fifth guy. That is, that's ridiculous, really. And if Charlie Morton does as performs like he has done of recent years, then it's going to be a bit of a long season for the rest of us, really. And I still think it is a case of the rest of the division just trying to be that wild card spot, really, and not get beat up by the Braves. Because it's everywhere you look. I mean, that infield is, I mean, goodness me, is insane. I mean, Freeman, Albies, Swanson, which I absolutely love. I love Swanson. He's one of the, I think he's, when you talk about shortstops, because we've got so many in this division, we'll talk about shortstops a bit later, obviously. But I don't feel enough gets said about Swanson. I think, I mean, it's certainly from a defensive point of view, I really highly rate him. And then obviously in the outfield, we've got, you know, Ozuna back 4 years, $64 million, which is, it was probably the least surprising move of the offseason for any team, I think, because I think everyone just knew that he was such a good fit. And then obviously Ronald Acuna, you know, it's one of the most terrifying hitters in this division if you're not a Braves fan. So it's, I mean, how quickly Mike Soroka will be back to being Mike Soroka. I think he's pitching today, I believe, which is his first. He's not going to start. I think Drew Smiley's pitching against the Red Sox in their final spring training game, and I think they're hoping to get one or two innings out of Soroka. So it'll be interesting whether he's going to go to the minors and just pitch a little bit more, because it's just two innings basically does seem a little bit light to come in into a full roster and then become just a starting pitcher again. That does seem a little bit unrealistic. So imagine maybe Sean Newcomb might just play a few games while Soroka gets some innings. Yeah, I fully expect the Braves to win 95 to 100 games this year. I think they're going to be the team to beat.
I agree. I think, to be honest, I think anything under like 94 wins would be seen as a failure for the Braves. I think this is an excellent team. I think one of the X factors of this team might be Austin Riley as well. And obviously, yeah, he came through with a lot of fanfare in 2019. This is a team that has consistently brought through young guys with a lot of hype in the last 2, 3, 4 seasons. And I feel like Austin Riley's the only one who hasn't lived up to it. And if he can figure it out in 2021, like, this team could be unbelievable. You know, I mean, obviously, like, it's going to be hard for anybody in the National League to compete with the riches of the Dodgers, but this Braves team to me looks excellent. I think it's really exciting. And I think that as much as the Mets have had a really interesting offseason for a lot of reasons, I can't say for certain that, you know, the Mets aren't going to win the division, but I see a lot of projections having the Mets being like 5 games better than the Braves, and I'm just not buying it. I'm just not buying it at the moment. Now, obviously, we'll see baseball soon enough, and you know, we will see how it goes. But I love this Braves team. It's actually really frustrating, you know, after having spent 20 years hating the Braves, just to have this incredibly likable team. I mean, this is a team that is just so likable, so easy to watch, so easy to root for as well. And I'm going to have to spend 162 days rooting against them this season. And I find that sad, to be perfectly honest. So, I mean, honestly, like genuinely, like, if I was a complete neutral but a baseball fan, that would be one of the teams I'd want to watch every day. You know, they are just exciting. They are young. They are improving. They are strong in terms of depth and strong in the lineup. Even like 6, 7, 8 deep in the lineup, that can be a very good team. So I love what the Braves have done so far. And I'm sick of the fact that we're going to have to face them for a decade. I think we'll save the New York Mets for the main event today, I think, because obviously it's been the most exciting New York Mets offseason I can remember, although not all of it positive.
Yeah, good old Mets.
we'll get to that. So Philadelphia Phillies. So obviously last year was, thank God it was, in some ways, thank God it was only 60 games last year, because this team was so unbelievably frustrating. I think lineup-wise, there's a lot to be pleased with. I think that they've done a really good job building a lineup. It's just everything else around it has just been so incredibly frustrating. Now, the good news for Phillies fans is the bullpen has been performing really, really well in spring training after a couple of additions. 2020 put forward one of the worst bullpens in MLB history, and I'm not even being hyperbolic when I say that. Now, obviously, a lot of the Philly success will depend on the rotation. You've got to be happy with Nola. You've got to be happy with Wheeler. It's going to depend on who emerges after that. Obviously, Matt Moore's been brought in, which is a bit of a boom or bust signing. I'm happy with the lineup, though. You know, obviously, I'm delighted that JT Realmuto was re-signed. I'm delighted that Andrew McCutcheon's still there. I'm really, really happy that Didi Gregorius got extended. I was very, very impressed with Alec Bohm. So there is a lot to like about this Phillies team. It's hard to look at this Phillies team at the same time, though, and say it's going to contend for the division. I just don't see it. But I'm excited for this season, which may be a mistake considering it's been, what, a decade since the Phillies were last in the playoffs. I think actually we have the longest run without a playoff spot in the National League, which is fantastic. So, Thomas, from the outside, what are you seeing when you see the Philadelphia Phillies?
Well, I guess looking at it from an outsider's perspective, I was very pleased for you, sir, certainly, that obviously that you got in Dave Dombrowski, you know, sort of proven talent as president of baseball operations. And, you know, I kind of quite like the small risk, high reward signings that you were making. I mean, if you look at the last three seasons, you know, in terms of ERA, four National League East sides are in the top 10 for the worst ERAs. So it's and the Phillies, as we talk about the Phillies, is 4.67. So it's, you know, you didn't need to be a genius to see where the problems with the Phillies was largely lying. Obviously, there was a number of issues, but, you know, Neftali Feliz, Jose Alvarado, even Nova, Archie Bradley. I think even you brought in Kinsler, didn't you, as well? So it was, I liked some of the additions you made, because if you actually just look at the actual, as you say, the lineup, it's really good. I particularly like your outfield. You know, I'm intrigued by how Adam Haseley does. I've always been a bit of a fan of Matt Joyce. I think he's a very solid outfield guy, and sounds like someone you need in the team. Andrew McCutcheon, you know, is Andrew McCutcheon. You know, you've got some good young players as well. Obviously, Rhys Hoskins, Alec Bohm, proven talent like Didi Gregorius. I really like your lineup, I got to admit. And obviously, getting Realmuto back is a huge, huge plus. It's the starting rotation-wise, I think a little bit depends on how much better Spencer Howard is going to be. I know he's still a kid and it's difficult, and it would be harsh to judge him this early, but it would be interesting I think the Phillies' prospects this season does depend on the rotation, because I think your offense is going to be great. You know, as you say, Nola, Wheeler, that's great. And, you know, it's very middling after that with Moore, Eflin and Anderson. So it would be interesting. I think it is going to depend how well someone like, say, a Spencer Howard does, not to put too much pressure on the lad, but it is based on that, how much you get out of Spencer Howard, Matt Moore, Zach Eflin, Chase Anderson. I think if any chance of the Phillies bringing a surprise and bringing a wild card spot, you know, and getting 85 to 90 wins or something, you really are going to need the rotation to maybe do things that maybe not to, likely to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And now, obviously, I expect the bullpen to be better than last year by default, because it can barely be any worse. Now, yeah, I love the lineup. I'm really excited about the lineup. I think, you know, this is the type of lineup that once a month is just going to hang like 17 runs on somebody. But again, it's the same thing we've seen the last couple of years with the Phillies. The lineup's great, and obviously, a lot is going to depend on the pitching. Now, the rotation, you know what you're going to get out in Nola and Wheeler, but everything else is a bit of a question mark. I mean, there's reasons to be optimistic about both Eflin and Howard, but if neither of them really pan out the way we'd expect or hope, then all of a sudden you've got a black hole, and it's certainly not going to be filled by guys like Vince Velasquez, you know. So I have a bit of optimism about the Phillies this year, but I'm perfectly aware of the fact that they're in a tough division that I don't think they're really in with a chance of winning. And I mean, obviously, I think the best the Phillies can hope for is a wild card this year. I think they can contend for the wild card this year, and I think finally they'll probably have a winning record. But if I was to be perfectly honest, I'd imagine this team is probably going to be like 84 and 78, probably round about where I'm expecting the Nationals to be. Slightly above 500, but not enough to make it. But I'm excited, and you know, I think it's going to be a very interesting season for the Phillies. I think obviously you touched on Dave Dombrowski as well. The biggest criticism I've heard about Dave Dombrowski is that, you know, he comes in, he builds this team, and then leaves it in ruins. I'm like, this team's been in ruins for years, you know? Like, it's only been the last couple of years that this team's been any good. And for years it was in ruins. So if he's going to build a contender and leave it in ruins, I'm fine with that. Like, to me, it's like, I've seen a decade of this team being terrible for the most part. Like, I haven't seen this team have a winning record since, what, 2011? So give me all the Dave Dombrowski stereotypes. I'm more than happy to see this team go in the right direction. I don't expect it to be in 2021, obviously. I expect it's going to take a couple of years. But I think they have a decent core. And it's probably a year too early for this team to be competing for a division. But I reckon it'll be decent.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be saying this for a couple of years, but it's like, I'd step in, for the first time in a couple of years, I do see a marked improvement. I do see things I like with the Phillies. And I said, I expect them, again, I've been saying this probably for a couple of years, but I do expect them whilst not to get a wild card spot, although considering how bad the NL Central is, the Phillies might just need to be better than 500 just to get in. I mean, it might be that type of season, but because we know one of the teams is going to be the Padres, so it might just, you know, it's, you know, so we already know that by default. So it's basically, and I don't think it's coming from the Central. So I do think the wild card spot is coming from the East, the other one, I should say.
I tend to agree that, like, as much as stuff like that can never be certain, I think we're fairly, I think we can be fairly certain that second place in the NL East is going to play second place in the NL West in the wild card.
Yeah, certainly. And I said, I think I see enough with the Phillies to think they'll have a winning record this year at last. I mean, to be honest, I think, like, long-suffering fans like yourself, I think that's all you kind of asked for after at the moment. I mean, I know ever since Harper joined, there's been this huge expectation and that the Phillies, you know, especially when you, I think, was it, did he get Harper and Real Muto in the same winter?
Yes. You know, I can still remember before that season. Can't remember. It was a British newspaper. It might have been The Guardian. But it was obviously like guys like David Lengel, who used to do the MLB on 5 coverage. And I'm pretty sure there was three of them did their predictions for the season, and two of them picked the Phillies to win the World Series, and the other one said they wouldn't make the playoffs. And I was like, the odd one out of here is 100 times more likely to be right. And I guess it goes to show the sort of hype of the champions of the offseason type of thing. Now, I know obviously you don't care about this, but the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were long hyped as the champions of the last NFL offseason, and they won the Super Bowl, so it can work out. But there, so often there tends to be a champion of the offseason that just ends up a little bit better than the season before. And I'm not meaning to transition to the Mets when we talk about that, but the absolute undisputed champions of the offseason this year are the New York Mets. Now, obviously, there is a lot of reason to be optimistic. Now, I know, obviously, for you, you've been a baseball fan for, what, 8, 9 years, something like that?
Yeah, 9 years, yeah.
So as much as you've never seen a good Phillies team, I've been a baseball fan for 20 years, and I've barely ever seen a really good New York Mets team. I've seen some decent New York Mets teams, but I've never seen a New York Mets team be filled with this much hype. Now, I expect this team to probably make the wild card, first things first. But at the same time, like, and I know I shouldn't think like this, and I know this isn't how life works, but I've seen the New York Mets just be the Mets for so long that, like, that part of my brain just cannot shut off when it comes to the New York Mets. So obviously they're going to be better this season with some really good additions, but I will absolutely believe it when I see it. But I'm certainly not going to take them lightly by any means. This team could absolutely win the division with an unbelievable starting rotation and a lineup which was already pretty good and is obviously much improved on 2020. So, Thomas, I guess the floor is yours. How excited are you about the New York Mets in 2021?
Well, I know what I should say.
That was not the reaction I expected.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just torn. I'm torn between, as basically you say, Metsing. And, you know, it's, you know, and Francisco Lindor suddenly going below the Mendoza line, because if there's any team he's going to do that with, it would be the Mets winner. But it's, I mean, I see plenty of reasons for optimism, certainly. I mean, I've been optimistic before, you know, well, as optimistic as someone like me can be. I'm not generally an optimistic person about anything, but and it's come back to bite me in the arse. So I'm just being cautiously optimistic, really. This isn't just me saying this, I genuinely believe the Braves are a better team than us. I think they're more rounded than us. So I think we're very similar in standard. I think I said it on Twitter actually in the winter. I think if we added Springer, that might have just put us over. I think that was the one we needed, and I'm still a little bit disappointed that we didn't do it. But it was. I definitely see reasons to be optimistic. Even like some decent bench pieces as well. You know, there's, you know, people like, I know he's injured at the moment, but Jose Martinez, Villar, Pilar, Alberto Mora, you know, good defensive pieces there, and the odd, you know, could fill in on the odd day from the beginning. But, you know, when you look at the fact that on a typical day, the top eight is going to be like Nimmo, McNeil, Lindor, Alonso, Conforto, McCann, Dom Smith, JD Davis. It's
pretty good.
There's not an easy out there, and you know, no. as you will testify to, there was the old time over the last couple of years where you think, well, we'll get that out, you know, like a Juan Lagares or someone like that, or Ruben Tejada, someone like that. You know, there's always tend to be like an easy out, but none of them. I mean, you could put that top eight in probably about 10 different orders, really, because it's like you could. I think they like McNeil in the sort of the middle bit of it. I mean, they might even put Lindor at two and put McNeil and Alonso together. Because I know they like McNeil coming on where he's likely to have people on base, really, because he can do the most damage there. I think even though he's like the archetypal number one hitter, he's because, well, he gets hit all the time as well, so there's that, but he's got a terrific eye. But I think they because his eye is so good, and, you know, Nimmo can be trusted to get on base a little bit more as well. It's, you know, there's basically no easy outs there, which is encouraging, you know. And I, you know, I'm not Marcus Stroman's biggest fan, but having him at, like, say, number three in that inner one, I'm okay with that, especially with Taiwan Walker being added. I think that's a very solid addition. David Peterson impressed me last season coming in. I think he's never going to be like a top of the rotation sort of guy, but I reckon he's going to have a good career being like a number four, number five guy. And obviously Syndergaard is going to come back at some point this season as well. We don't know if as we've learned from so many pitchers, we don't know how he's going to react to Tommy John. So, but yeah, I think, you know, a rotation of DeGrom, Carrasco, Stroman, Walker, Peterson, with the chance of Syndergaard to come, that is, it's very encouraging for sure. And it's, I expect us to be, I'm expecting the wildcard game to be the Mets against the Padres, but which it always kind of feels almost sad, really. Can you imagine, like, the team, both those teams are absolutely stacked, and we're going to do it on one game? It does seem a little bit a bit harsh on the public, really, because I think, you imagine watching that if you're a neutral. I mean, that would...
as a neutral, it would be absolutely great, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So it's... I'm cautiously optimistic and everything. So it's... Obviously, there's a lot still to happen in the next couple of days, obviously, because of this Lindor-imposed deadline of when he might sign an extension. So there's still that to iron out as well. So, it's cautiously optimistic, yeah.
Yeah, so going back to what you were saying about the lineup, I like Brandon Nimmo leading off. The guy gets on base. I quite like Lindor as a two. You know, you want to get that guy as many at-bats as possible in the season. And I guess probably what I would look to do then would be, and I know it's not going to be every day the same, but if you have Jeff McNeil at three, Alonso at four, and Michael Conforto at five, I think that's great. Not saying that they would be a bad lineup, regardless of what you did, but, like, you know, I think that's how I would quite like to lay out that lineup. Now, obviously, if the DH was in, I'd be more inclined to bat Pete Alonso third, but, you know, it's horses for courses. You know, that's an if what maybe, but I like the fact that, you know, the Mets have done what they've done this off season. Now, the rotation was already very, very good. The lineup was always pretty good. You know, like, even if you go back a few years, and a lot of this team was the lineup, but then obviously Pete Alonso came through and was terrific, and then adding Francisco Lindor this season has just kind of been the icing on the cake. I know, obviously, you're disappointed, as you mentioned, about George Springer. But, you know, this Mets team has been pretty average for a few years, and I feel like Rome wasn't built in a day. But I also feel like this has been a right underachieving team over the last few years. So, you know, adding just a couple of pieces, I think, makes it a pretty damn good team. Now, I'm with you. I expect the Braves to win the division. I also expect the Mets to make the wild card and play the Padres and probably blow a 5-run lead. But I couldn't resist. But yeah, obviously, like, this off season's been, you know, a bit of everything for the New York Mets. Obviously, the big excitement about the new owner coming in, and a guy who actually seems to really care about the team. So that's good. Obviously, then he very quickly got himself, you know, on the bad side of some people with the GameStop controversy. We've had Mickey Callaway, and now we've got the Francisco Lindor contract fiasco. So despite the fact that this has been your most exciting offseason in a couple of decades, there's still been some top meting going on.
Yeah. Does it get much more... The last two seasons, we've fired a manager and a general manager before they've actually managed and general managed a major league game. I mean, it's...
You know something? I completely fucking forgot about the manager. I remember, obviously. I know the general manager thing. There's been so much Mets stuff going on the last few years. I completely forgot they fired Carlos Beltran before he'd even managed.
Yeah, for something that was nothing to do with the Mets. It was, I mean, it's
what a franchise.
Yeah, exactly. The Mets are going to Mets. I mean, Jared Porter basically got hired, traded for Francisco Lindor, and got sacked for being a pervert within about a month. That is...
That is the Mets to a key,
I mean, that is... and, you know, then Ryan Ellis, I think he's one of the hitting instructors. He got fired for similar reasons. Mickey Callaway has obviously since left, but by the sounds of what I've read, there were people who were making accusations about him before he was at the Mets. So, and, you know, and I sort of believe that baseball, as most sports, I do think at the top level, you kind of know what, there's a community, you know, it's,
you
kind of know who's like what, you know, yes. It's, you know, so I think even if we didn't do any sort of background checks, put it that way, on Callaway, we would have known something. We would have heard rumors. You know, so it's, and, you know, maybe, you know, and it, to be honest, it sounded like a bit like that with Jared Porter. I don't know if Ryan Ellis was like that as well, but it just goes to show that we don't really do enough background checks on it, or if we did, we didn't care, you know, about them being twats, basically. You know, it did annoy me, you know, but I was glad to see, you know, Sandy Alderson back. You know, that was another positive, but yeah, it was frustrating that we've allowed this to happen, really, and hopefully it will be the beginning of, you know, a bit of a new era of culpability about these type of people, that and hopefully there won't be a, I hate to be brutal about it, that they won't be allowed to get jobs, basically, because you know, there's got to be certain standards that have got to be met. And, you know, being like Jared Porter, Ryan Ellis, Mickey Callaway, it's, you know, that cannot be allowed, obviously. And we should be more enlightened in this day and age. So it's, and I just hope that it was a bit of a moment where we look back on saying that's when it, not saying it started, I'm not going to say we're going to be groundbreakers in this sort of thing, but maybe this winter, the likes of Jared Porter, Ryan Ellis, Mickey Callaway, it's going to deter other men from behaving like this way, hopefully. I mean, I know I'm being very naive there, because there will be, law of averages, there's going to be horrible people there, and it's going to continue. But if we could just get the culture to be sort of sedated a little bit, you know, that'll be something, you know. So it's, and I'm just glad that, you know, I mean, Steve Cohen actually announced it on Twitter. I mean, pretty much within 24 hours of the Jared Porter story coming out, he was sacked, you know. So he was, you know, there was no messing about there. And I think it was important that he did that quickly. I mean, he pretty much, by the sounds of it, he got up, saw the story overnight. When he woke, the story broke overnight, I think. He woke up, saw it, and basically called him and said, you know, fetch out your locker, you're fired, essentially. So it was important that he made a point saying this is not going to be tolerated under my stewardship.
Yeah, perfect. Honestly, I actually had a lot to say about that, but I could not have summed it up any better. So absolutely well said. Not absolutely well said. I could not have said it better. I think that, you know, we're now in an era where that kind of behavior, it's not just that it can be tolerated, but people need to stop making excuses for it. And yeah, Thomas, you absolutely smashed it. So no point in me adding anything to it. So well done, mate. That was perfect. but yeah, I think the Mets are going to be fun this season. Now, the Mets are often fun for me, but on the field, they might actually potentially be fun for you for once. So it's going to be really interesting. I think we have very similar predictions about how this season's going to go. I expect the Marlins to be fifth, but I expect them to be pretty decent. And I think that just kind of goes to show what we've potentially got this year in the National League East. I think we've got an excellent team at the top, a very interesting team right behind, couple of really intriguing teams who I think will be above 500, and then a team who I think will probably be below 500 just because of the nature of how strong the division is. I don't think the Miami Marlins are a bad team by any means, but I think this is a really, really good division from top to bottom. And it's really funny, actually, because I remember we did a podcast a few years ago where we were looking at this division just being like, nobody stands out. You know, nobody stands out as being any good. The Marlins were terrible. The Phillies were terrible. The Mets were terrible. The Braves were starting to get good. And the Nationals were kind of winning the division by default. And now look where we are. I think this division has improved so dramatically that I think it's really exciting for the season ahead.
Yeah, I think obviously the National League West will have arguably the two best sides in the National League, and maybe even arguably the two best sides in baseball, with the Padres and the Dodgers, and certainly amongst got some of the most exciting players. But I'd say in terms of a whole division, it's not going to be. It's basically just the only thing that's going to be interesting is will Padres and Dodgers both win 100 games? That's basically the only thing that's going to come out of that season.
Yeah.
Division. So I think, even though I think a lot, and the Mets will have to go full Mets. I mean, do things that even the Mets I didn't think were capable of. To not finish in the top two, because I do think, like, you know, as long as I just don't see a scenario apart from Mets being Mets that we don't finish in the top two, that the Braves and the Mets are not the top two. I just, you know, putting it around down aside my own natural Mets pessimism for a moment, I just can't see a side with that much talent not finishing in the top two. It would be almost extraordinary.
Yeah. I think the thing with the Mets is that I think this might be a bit too quick for them, but I look at this Mets team and the way they're being run and kind of expecting them to be a contender in 2022, big time. Now, obviously, a lot of that's going to depend on the Lindor trade because obviously bringing in a guy like Francisco Lindor is amazing. But if they can't get him signed up, then that's already a black eye on the organization, how it's going to be run in the future. But, I mean, there's optimism with the Mets. And, I mean, so, like, every sport has a team that is just, you know, kind of like a running joke. And I mean, we all remember when the Cubs were the running joke, and, you know, all it took was one World Series and nobody looks at them like that anymore. All it would take for the New York Mets is one season of storming the National League East or making the playoffs and making a deep run. And all of a sudden people stop looking at the Mets that way. Unless, of course, they do something hilarious when they get to the playoffs. But it takes very little to actually change that perspective. So if they balls up the Francisco Lindor contract and then win 82 games this season, then we can all, obviously not you, but we can all have a right good chuckle. But at the same time, I think this team is, you know, this team is already pretty good, if kind of underachieving. So at some point that's going to turn around, and I think the renewed optimism can be the start of that. And obviously adding a prime bat like Lindor can make a massive difference this year. So before we go, I guess we'll just kind of cut on some interesting predictions, but I'm going to give you some hypotheses at the moment. I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about the division. These are obviously complete hypotheticals. And all it is really is a yes or no for these ones. So, first things first, if the Atlanta Braves were in the American League, do you think they would be the best team in the AL?
That's I wasn't prepared for that.
You won't be prepared for any of these, to be honest. Yeah, but I think they're interesting discussion points.
That is an interesting one. Yes, I think they are superior. I think the best team in the AL, I mean, in theory, I mean, the Astros and the Yankees are very, very good. The Astros not as good as they were. The Yankees, I'm yet to be 100% convinced that they're the real deal. So, yeah, I'd say the Braves are better than any side in the AL, yes.
Yeah, I was thinking about that at the start of the podcast, and I was like, you know what, I actually do believe that. I actually do believe that the three best teams in baseball are in the National League this year. I think the Dodgers, the Padres and the Braves are the three best teams in baseball this year, certainly on paper. Another hypothetical, if you put the Washington Nationals or the Philadelphia Phillies in the National League Central, do you think they would win the division?
No. I do like the Cardinals. I do think
that's what I was thinking. Yeah, because I think that's a weak division, but I do think the Cardinals are slightly better.
Yeah, I'd say so. I think they're going to win that division by about 10 games. I mean, that's not even saying the Cardinals are a great side. I only think they're a pretty good side. I just think the rest of that division is just totally, utterly crap. I mean, really. So I think the Phillies and Nationals were in that division, I'd say that the Phillies and the Nationals are better than four teams in that division.
Yeah, I agree completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought of both of those, and I thought it would be kind of interesting just to kind of gauge where we are in terms of like the rest of the league. Now, obviously, we know how good the top two teams in the National League West are, but I think it's really interesting when you look at the strength of the West and the East compared to the Central, and just the top end of the NL compared to the American League. Now, obviously, there's good teams in the American League. We can't pretend that there's not, but I think the Braves are the third best team in baseball, at least at the moment. And I just think that it's going to be really, really interesting going forward. Now, so we've obviously done our predictions on teams. Who do you think is going to be, obviously we're going to talk about, we could talk about MVP for the league and whatnot, but purely if there was an MVP for the National League East, I suppose we'll go one batter and one hitter and one pitcher. Who do you think is going to be the standouts this year?
That's tough. I mean, hitter-wise, I've already said that I think Alonso is going to lead the league in home runs. I made a rare bet of mine, actually, that he was 11-1 to be the leading one. And he has looked, I know you can't put too much stock by spring training, but he has looked fantastic, and he's going the other way even as well. So it's I'm always sort of predestined to think that he'll be someone and the Braves. So I'll say, yeah. I kind of think that by definition, he's too young to be at his best yet. But I think Acuña is going to have a big year, so I'll say him.
Yeah, I think for me it would definitely be between Acuña and Juan Soto. For me, I think Alonso's great, but when you look at how good Acuña and Soto already are at such a young age, I think that it's not guaranteed they'll only get better. But I'm really interested to see what those two guys do this season. And obviously, I mean, when it comes to a pitcher, you guys have the best pitcher in the world right now. So you know, Jacob deGrom to me is the best pitcher in baseball. But I think we're lucky in this division to have a lot of really, really good pitchers. I think that you look at every single team and you look at what they've got to offer, I think that this is just going to be a fun division. Now, the guy that really stands out to me that I think could have a real breakout year is Sanchez for the Marlins. I think that what we saw of him was already pretty interesting. And yeah, I think it's probably going to be like a load management season for him. I don't think they're going to chuck him out there for 220 innings or anything mad like that. But I reckon he could be really, really exciting. And obviously, in some ways, to some Phillies fans, it'll feel like a loss. But that's what you have to do to get a guy like Real Muto. So it's a trade that benefits both sides. Certainly, it would have been how we're talking about with Lindor, if the Phillies had done that to achieve nothing and then let Real Muto go walk in free agency. But Sixto Sanchez is jumping out to me as a guy who could have a really, really big season in 2021. So anyway, I guess we can start wrapping up. Thomas, you got anything else before we go?
I guess the bit I had was to put on Lindor, it was. And it says, as things stand, because it's getting close to that deadline, is Lindor is asking for 12 years, $385 million, which works out at $32.08 million per year. We've offered, and everyone seems to be suggesting that this is our final offer. It's 10 years, $325 million, which is easy maths, $32.5 million. So around about the same per year. So it's just on year. So we've actually agreed on the finances, just not the length. It feels like this, trying to be optimistic, it does feel like this should be able to be workable. You know, they should be able to just sort of work this out somehow. I don't know. I'm obviously no expert. Maybe include a few opt-outs. I don't know. But it's that's the only way I can see is going to 12, really, is if we add a few opt-outs. But yes, I mean, I guess what I wanted to touch upon was the fact that I just think it's a bit of a dangerous game for Lindor, really, because it's been talked about for years that the free agency of this year is going to include a shit ton of shortstops. You know, when I looked it up early, there's 13, and just amongst them is Lindor, Marcus Semien, Trevor Story, Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, Javier Baez, and even like if you just take out them, you've got seasoned ones like Brandon Crawford, Andrelton Simmons, Miguel Rojas, Jose Iglesias. I just think it will be, I mean, I think Seager will eventually re-sign with the Dodgers either way, but Story is certainly going to walk. But I just think it's a little bit of a risk with that huge sort of class of shortstop they're going to ask for something close to $400 million. I just think it's a bit of a risk for Lindor. I think 10 years, 325 is about, I might go as high as 350, but apart from, I don't think he's worth more than that, especially, you know, when you could be really reality looking at Baez or Seager next winter. I just think it's a bit of a risky strategy from Lindor. Maybe he's thinking, I'm going to sign with the Mets, whatever. I'm just trying to get out as much as possible and just drag this out as much as possible. So the cynic, I mean, that is both cynical and optimistic. So it's, I just wanted your thoughts on it, really. I just wonder whether you thought, like me, that Lindor's playing a bit of a dangerous game.
I didn't realize there was that many shortstops who were about to hit the open market this offseason coming up. And I suppose that makes a big difference. I guess the other thing that could make a big difference, and obviously it's impossible to predict, but I guess the next stage of the pandemic will make a big difference because, you know, I mean, we're in a situation right now where, you know, fans will be able to get back into stadiums. But for the most part, I think it's unlikely that by the end of the season, we're going to see many more teams other than the Texas Rangers having 100% attendances. So I think it's really, really, it gets to the point eventually where teams just can't afford it, you know, like can't afford mega, mega, mega deals. And now obviously they're still going to happen and obviously there's not going to be a massive hit on them. But like I already see with like the NFL where the salary cap's gone down for the 2021 season. Obviously baseball doesn't have a salary cap. And there's always one or two teams that are going to be able to spend whatever money they absolutely want. But those teams are finite. And to me, I think that I tend to side with you there. I tend to agree that now I ultimately expect he's going to get signed, right? And I know obviously it's been talked about that it's a deadline thing before the start of the season and he's not going to negotiate, which isn't exactly a scenario where if he doesn't sign by Thursday, then he's going to file his free agency papers in November. Like, I don't think it's as simple as that. Like, obviously, I think the guy still might, but, you know, don't get me wrong, right? From a New York Mets standpoint, if the Mets go 79 and 83 and have the absolute worst season possible and everything goes wrong, then Lindor hits free agency, life sucks, and he disappears. But I think if this team shows any promise, that guy's going to sign a 10-year deal. You know, and I don't think he's going to turn down $325 million over 10 years. So even if it doesn't get done by Thursday, I still expect it to happen. unless obviously the season goes to hell in a handbasket. Now, if you think of the options of where he could go that potentially would be better than the Mets, he's not going to end up in the Dodgers. Certainly not going to end up in the Padres. He's certainly not going to end up in the Braves. I can't even remember who the shortstop is for the Yankees at the moment.
Yeah, I can't remember because obviously Gregoris is with you. I can't remember.
To me, in terms of like the big teams who need a shortstop, it would be the Yankees. The Yankees would be the one team. And I know that would suck for you, obviously, but like I think his options would be incredibly limited.
Yeah, good point. I mean,
compared to where it should be for a guy of his talent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm expecting someone like Trevor Story to go to the Yankees. Really, though, to me, that seems like a really good fit. So it's
absolutely.
But, I mean, Lindor. The only good fit about him and the Yankees is the fact that it's got a short, you know, right field porch. You know, typical about the Yankees, but you know that is a mitigating factor. So it's whenever you think
must be incredibly appealing for any left-handed or switch hitter, really.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to be realistic about this, really. I mean, Eric Young Jr. hit a bloody home run in that ballpark. That's how short that was. It's like that old football chant, you know, if he can hit a home run, so can I. Really, it just feel like one of those, really. If he can hit one in New York, at Yankee Stadium, then every lefty can, really. God bless him. You make a lot of very good points. I mean, maybe we've Mets fans have been sucked into believing Lindor too much when he says he won't talk during the season. I mean, maybe we should only take that at face value and really, I mean, you know, times change, really. I mean, it's how seriously you want to take that. But I just want it done. And, you know, it would... As some people
that I completely understand because it was the same thing with Real Muto for the Phillies. It was so frustrating. And yeah, obviously it's great to have finally got it done. But yeah, it was such a frustrating time.
Yeah. I mean, and plus you don't want, you know, Lindor before he's even hit a ball in anger to, you know, to have a bit of a shadow over him before. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the Mets fans, I mean, there's one where we are a lot like the Yankees fans. We are pretty ruthless. We are pretty, there's certain standards we like to be kept. And, you know, if he doesn't sign before Thursday, after what he's already said as well, it does cast a little, I mean, we're not going to turn on him immediately, but all it takes is, you know, a 2-for-30 start to the season, as well as everything else. And then, you know, we are going to start probably getting on his back a little bit. So I guess that is just the only worry I probably do have going into the season is if it doesn't work itself out about how it might just go over into the season, really. It might be a good thing there's no fans there then. Actually, you know, we'll let him look at that. Because you can imagine what Mets fans are. Mets fans are not shy about...
No, definitely not.
Letting people, their players know what they think of them. So if he doesn't accept it, it might well be the best thing for him to not have fans there. But I guess we'll see. It's not, you know, I mean, I'm being paranoid and, you know, this time tomorrow, you know, he'll be sorted. But it's very teasing and it's a bit annoying. And I'd rather it just sorted itself out where I could just concentrate on the field rather than what's going on off it.
Yeah, but thankfully on the field starts in a couple of days. Obviously, it's just going to be nice to see baseball again with a crowd. So, yeah, it's not a full crowd, but apart from in Texas, obviously, but I'm definitely looking forward to it. So, we'll wrap up just now. I hope that's been, you know, it's been over an hour. Blabbering about the National League East. I think we've done all right there. Thomas, as always, it's a pleasure talking baseball with you.
Cheers. Thanks, mate.
And this tends to be a reasonably sporadic podcast, but we'll see what we can do over the next couple of months to talk about how wrong we are about all our predictions, how terrible the Mets are, how terrible the Phillies are, and how the Marlins are top of the division. We will talk to you again sometime.